alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And tonight, if y'all will help me welcome our speaker, Chris from Culpeper.
Thank you. Yeah, I can still see over the podium a little bit. I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
Guess I'll start with the logistics of my sobriety date is January 18th, 2011, so I just celebrated 9 years about a week ago. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, which is Saturday morning at 7 a.m., the 11 any length group in Culpeper. We'd love to have people come. It's a big book meeting. And as one of our other home group members says, it's the best meeting in Culpeper. So I know a lot of people say if your home group isn't the best group, then you better find another one. Because I really love that meeting. I've been in it since I came in. Pretty much going to try and tell you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Funny, because I told myself I've been doing the cliff notes of this going into Boxwood. Feel sorry for Jerry and Frank because they've been hearing it. Sort of doing a shorter version of this, always afraid I'm going to miss something. You know, the nerves kick in when you get up here as opposed to just sitting in a chair in a room. I basically came from a loving family. There's my parents, my sister, and myself, and I was more or less the black sheep of the family. There are no other alcoholics, even in sort of my immediate, extended family, there weren't really alcoholics. So I really felt different when I did start drinking. But as far as growing up went, it changes over time. I remember when I spoke the first time, I was like, I didn't fit in right away. Well, I wouldn't say right from the drop that I didn't feel right, but about sixth grade in school, I started not feeling like I fit in. Thought I was different. Thought I didn't measure up to everybody else. Prior to that, I think I was just a kid. You have that childlike, tendencies or childlike view of life. It's just this is learning, or it's just all new. But then I got to a point where something triggered in my brain that I sort of felt like everybody was looking at me, everybody was judging me, I didn't measure up. Funny thing is it wasn't like I wasn't a popular kid. I was with the popular kids in school. I wasn't made fun of or anything, but I just didn't feel a part of. And that went on pretty much from elementary through junior high. I hated junior high. I hated having to go to dances. I was the guy that stood up against the bleachers, never went out and danced. Afraid to ask a girl to dance. And 99% of the time, it was because, I'm not good enough. She's too good for me. I shot myself in the foot right away. But that's my thinking pattern. That's the way my thinking pattern worked. I made it through. I always got good grades. I wasn't in trouble. I was a good soccer player. Life was pretty normal. By the time I got to high school, those type of feelings started getting a little stronger. Still not fitting in. But again, it wasn't like I was an outsider either. I had plenty of friends, but I just didn't feel like I could come out of my shell. And my first drink I actually had when I was a kid growing up, we had cookouts and stuff, a sip of beer there, a sip of beer here, that sort of thing. But my first real full drink, some guys of mine had stolen a 12-pack from their dad, and it had been sitting in the woods in the hot summer August, all day. And we went out there at night, and I had a warm bush beer. And I just, Ugh, I didn't like it. I really didn't like the taste of beer and really didn't think I was going to have any problems. You know, I'm not going to turn into one of the drinkers. And I would go to parties and really, you know, I had a pretty strict household. You know, I was fearful enough of my parents that I didn't want to be disciplined. And so when I went to parties and stuff, I didn't want to come home with alcohol on my breath. Didn't want to get in trouble, you know. And so when my other friends were drinking, I'd, you know, no, no. But again, I was at those parties and miserable because I didn't feel like I fit in. Finally, at one weekend when I was 14, got a setup. It wasn't a party. It was more a small get-together with some friends. I was at his house. It was all set up that I didn't have to go home. The older kid in the neighborhood got us a case of beer, and they said, "We want to see Chris get drunk." And I went ahead and, you know, I was like, I didn't have to deal with the folks, so this is safe. And I started drinking, and, you know, I was the center of attention and the life of the party, and it just felt good. And I remember I actually was diving from the top of the steps down to the bottom in a concrete floor at the basement. You know, I don't know, I didn't feel anything. I was drunk, you know. It was a heyday. I remember actually throwing up in the middle of it and then going back and saying, "Give me more because this feels good." Now, you know, that feeling led me to now when I go out to a party on a Friday night or a Saturday night, I want that feeling because now I can come out of my shell. And, you know, freshman year in high school, it wasn't like I went overboard. You know, here and there I would have that and be the life of the party at a, you know, and drink and get drunk. I was on the soccer team. I was on the wrestling team. I actually won districts, you know. I was a pretty good wrestler. I was 112 pounds. I wish I could get back there. But, you know, I was doing well in school. Grades were up, you know. But as the years went by, you know, it's funny. I see now where I made excuses to drink, whereas I thought I was making other decisions. I told you about that 112 because I really had to suck weight to get down to that in my sophomore year. And I wanted to do it again junior year, but my parents wouldn't let me because it wasn't healthy. And I used that as an excuse of, well, then I'll show you I'm just not going to wrestle. Now, I guess it's sort of my first resentment, you know, one of those first resentments. And, you know, today I can see that, you know, I also had that in the back of my mind. Well, if I'm not involved in sports, I have more free time and I can go out with my friends and drink and party a little bit more. And, you know, what was hilarious was I was 112 that one year. Well, I bloated up to 150 real quick, drinking beer a lot on the weekends, getting drunk with all my buddies. And truthfully, I really didn't see a problem. I was doing what everybody else did. Now, fear is a big part of my story, and another fear I had was leaving home. You know, when it came time to graduate high school, I applied to one school, which was one state over, and the other two were community colleges local. And I actually got, in my mind, lucky I didn't get accepted to that school out of state. I really felt like I was pushed into school, and I went for a year, year and a half, and finally just said, you know, this isn't for me. I don't want to go. And ended up getting a job working at the local cable company. I like working on things, fixing and repairing. But I got involved with that group. You know, at this point, I'm still 18 years old and under the legal limit. But we would work nights, do these things where we'd go to apartment buildings to tag cables. And after it was over, "Hey, Chris, you want to come out?" And, you know, because I was with them, it was like I never got carded. And that was a big deal for me because getting on my beer before was there was always an older brother, sister, somebody easy enough to get it. But this was, I'm sitting in a restaurant, you know, I'm drinking with everybody, and I'd get drunk there and leave, drive home drunk and not even think about it. I also think it was a little bit more lenient back in the day, but still I would drive home drunk. And at that point, I'm still not quite, you know, drinking heavily as far as I'm concerned. Life is going pretty well. I quit that job because I'll tell you what got me there was I was tired of digging holes while it was raining and they'd filling up with water faster than I could get the dirt out. And I just was like, I heard ads on the radio to go to trade school for computers. And at that time, they were short on people, so I went to went ahead and applied and got in the trade school. And what was interesting about that was I was 21 by then, and I took a job in a convenience store to supplement income while I was gone. And I would start school 7:30, done at 3, start the job 3:30, off at 11, and I would pick up a six-pack on my way home every night. You know, I was still living at home. I still remember my mother making the comment, "What's this, a six-pack every night?" You know, and for a non-alcoholic, that seems like a lot. When you're around alcoholics, it's like you don't have enough, you know. But at that point, but that sort of was, you know, hey, I was drinking every night. You know, for me, the justification for that for me was my mind races. I've heard plenty of people talk about, you know, the hamster wheel, the squirrel cage, whatever you want to call it. My mind is a hamster wheel and a squirrel cage, and I can't study because I'd be reading and I'd be off on what I got to do tomorrow, who I'm mad at from yesterday. You know, it just was always racing. But when I drank, for some reason I could focus. And I got through school by doing that. You know, all my studying was done through drinking. And I learned that in that trade school. Well, again, still not really feeling I'm an alcoholic at all. Still having it. I guess the other point is this is when alcohol is still working for me. You know, it's doing something for me. And that got me to graduate into an actual job in the computer field. I went through some small ones at first, and then I got in with a company and became more or less the lead computer guy in that company. And so I had to do a lot of nights and weekend work for them. But it was small, an 85-person company. I had keys to everything. You know, I felt like a bigwig. And I knew a lot of people there. Everybody knew me because I had to interact with them. I laugh because I compare that. Everybody in that company knew me because I had to interact with them. I'm in a job now. I've been there 2 years, and the type of work I do, I sit in front of a screen all day and don't move, and I don't know anybody in the company other than the people I work directly with. So I need to be forced to meet people. Anyway, going back to that key thing, when I was there on the weekends, the executive fridge was stocked. I was allowed to drink while I worked. And I took every opportunity to do so when I was working on the weekends or at night. Bad enough, I one of these situations, I'd gone out partying and had the keys to the kingdom, and it was past 2 o'clock, and people I was with, I was like, I know where we can get more. Went in there and, you know, got more. You know, you were right. Something came to me I didn't remember. We went in there and got more. I used the place for free alcohol when I could. Over time, what personal life, you know, I had girlfriends and, you know, family never disowned me. It wasn't like I didn't have a lot of consequences. During working for that place, though, I was living in Noakesville and driving to Northern Virginia, did most of my partying in Northern Virginia. What generally used to happen was I would I would leave work, go party, and then drive home. And I met a girl, and we didn't hit it off, but I tended to hit it off with every one of her friends. And unfortunately, she doesn't have any friends anymore because of me. But it was working for me because every girl I met in that time period met on a drunk. I could never meet a girl sober. In that same girl, there was a weekend, it was 1997. I had had my dad out to the house and my buddy that I lived with. And the Daytona 500 was on. I drank probably from 10 o'clock in the morning. Race was over. I'd been drinking all day. And that girl called me and said, "Hey, do you want to come up for dinner?" And I was like, "Oh, free meal. I ain't turning that down." And threw a 12-pack in the back seat and jumped in the car. And I thought I was Dale Earnhardt and ended up flipping the truck upside down. It's not false what they say. That was about 5 miles from my house on a curve. It was teeter-tottering in a ditch. God must have had more plans for me because I didn't have a seatbelt on. The steering wheel was horizontal when we finally got looking at the car. I didn't have any. The worst part of it was my first thought was, where the hell is that 12-pack? I've got to get it the hell out of here. That's what my thought process was. It wasn't anything other than I'm not going to go to jail for the, Well, tell you the truth, I couldn't go anywhere, so I sort of knew I was in some trouble. I ended up spending the night in jail that night, and, that was a tough one. I never wanted to disappoint my folks and had to tell them that, hey, I got a DUI and facing this. And, remember that beautiful truck I built? It's totaled. They're very supportive. Of course, this is really my first consequence. And ended up getting off on a technicality. There was something that the lawyer I had been fighting with the judge about, and it had to do with breathalyzers and taking your blood, and I had to get my blood taken or something. And so he says, "I'll allow you to use this one to help set precedent and reckless driving," But that did put enough fear in me that I quit driving to Northern Virginia to drink. I didn't want to be a bar drinker anymore. God put enough of the right type of fear in me to keep me, keep me in the house. But keep me in the house sort of made it a little worse because I drank a lot more on my own. When I was with my roommate, he drank a lot like me, but, more and more I look back on it, I was drunk and passed out on the couch by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was out cutting grass, still doing stuff, and he'd come by and, "Hey, man, going to get something to eat? You want something?" And I more or less was drinking first thing in the morning to get over the hangover from last night. All through this, I'm still able to maintain a job. Over time, this is more or less what happens. I had some things. I always felt material things were what I needed to make me feel better. When I was in the one job, they told me, "Well, you really need a degree if you want to advance." And, I went back to school and went to night school and, got a degree. But again, that night school, the way I survived that was drinking while I studied. I was working real hard one night on a final and went into the class. I was studying ahead of it and went into the class, and, man, I was lit. And the guy in one of my classmates was like, "You smell like a brewery. How the hell did you get here?" Did this, got the degree, moved on to, more jobs. I ended up meeting a girl at one of the jobs that we ended up in a pretty long relationship, about 7 years. And she knew me pretty well, but she never really had much problem with my drinking. You know, I could drink around her. Every once in a while, she'd just pop up and say, "Well, you know, you do drink more than most people." You know, that was about the worst of it. But I, you know, there's a selfish part of me in the sense of I want things to be my way. I always feel like in a relationship, it's got to be all exactly lined up. You know, can't be any glitches. And I ended up ending that relationship a year into sobriety. But I see now a lot of it was me. You know, I wanted to blame her, but a lot of it was me and how I was handling things. But she was a good partner, and, you know, I drank, but, you know, I thought the degree would do it. I ended up getting my own house. I thought, oh, I got my house. This is going to make me happy. And all through that, I was happy for a few minutes, you know, maybe a month, and then it would die down. And I'd go back to drinking. Most of my drinking at night was sitting on the couch, and I was irritated, going back to selfishness. You know, everything had to be my way, and I was drinking, you know, over resentments, over people. You know, that company that I had had all the free reign in, they ended up selling, you know, and we got new owners. And, you know, that was one of my big resentments. Why'd they sell? I was going to be able to stay here forever. And, you know, that was one of the big resentments I drank. One of the bosses I had left and didn't bring me with him. You know, that was another resentment I had. It was more getting towards drinking towards misery, you know. And it also got to drinking towards get over last night's hangover, or I need it just to feel a little bit better. I can always see that, and we just had this reading, you know, it's either yesterday, I can't remember if we read it at Boxwood or yesterday, about I'm always wanting to control and enjoy. And, you know, I always wanted to control and enjoy, but I couldn't do both. You know, if I controlled, I was miserable. If I enjoyed, I was well past where I should be. I don't know. It got to a point where I was just in a cycle on the merry-go-round. You know, my life was pretty much just go to work, come home, drink to get drunk, pass out, get up, throw up, look at the mirror. I can't believe I did this again. I'm not going to do it tonight. Go to work. You know, and many have talked about this. You know, I've heard many relate to this. You know, I don't want to do it again. And, you know, lying to myself that I'm only going to have one tonight. You know, it's only going to be one, maybe two. And, you know, I always laughed because I never went and bought one or two. I never even bought just six. I always bought 12 or 24. You know, it was never, you know, one or two. Why did I always have more? But the justification was, well, I have one or two. This will last me the rest of the week, two at a time. It never works that way. I used to, you know, stop at different 7-Elevens because I didn't want people to know I had a drinking problem. You know, it was never go to the Monday night was this place, Tuesday night was that place, Wednesday night was a different, because I hid mine pretty well, to tell you. The girlfriend was probably the closest to knowing how much I really drank. At family events, it was always get a few in before I go, drink two, make it look like I only drank two, come home and actually get the feeling I really wanted. So parents never, you know, family never really knew. I need to move the church steeple so I can see what time it is. Because I'm getting a little long on the how it was. But really, I was in misery. I knew in myself that I needed to do something. And again, going back to that control, I wanted to control. And I had grown up in a neighborhood. My next door neighbor's dad was an alcoholic, and another woman that lived a few doors down were alcoholic. I had actually seen both of them in both states, alcoholic and recovered. I'll tell you, the man, I was making making amends to me. I didn't even realize what he was doing until I got in here. I knew from them that if you go to AA, you never drink again. And that's why I was avoiding AA like the plague. I want to control my drinking. I want to be able to just have those one or two. So I went into a regular physician, and she gave me the, well, have you talked to anybody about it? And I was like, because really my theory was I was drinking because I was depressed. Doctor wanted to put me on pills, go talk to somebody. Well, I got on some pills, and to tell you the truth, I never thought they worked at all. But then again, I don't think you can tell much when you're drinking and still taking them. So I did end up at a therapist, counselor, and she, within the second meeting or third meeting, she let me talk and talk for a while. And then about the third meeting, she says, you sound like an alcoholic. You should try AA. You know, and I fought that. I just didn't want to. But the misery of drinking and being hungover every night, it was just getting to me, you know, deep down inside. I just was, the other saying I like that brought me, kept me coming, was sick and tired of being sick and tired. Because I was in misery. I walked into that first meeting. I was supposed to go on a Monday night, but I got too drunk and couldn't make it, you know. So I ended up going on a Tuesday night and walked into that room. It was at Church on the Rise up in Culpeper, and being a guy that grew up in Vienna and whatever, I thought it was kind of dreary and spooky looking out there. I'm lucky I didn't go to Rapidan first. It just seemed little. But when I got in there, I was shocked. I've heard it said from the podium that it feels like somebody came into the room and gave them my diary or gave them the book of my life. And that was my experience. I was like, really? You all feel this way? You know, and things I'm relating to when I, finally start getting, terminal uniqueness, I felt terminally unique. I felt I was the only person that felt this way. This is the only normal life to me. But they grabbed me. It's so great, another alcoholic sharing, because I don't think it can be done by a non-alcoholic. It just doesn't work. They don't understand. Whereas I was like, no way. You what? You feel the way I do. That got me to come in. And I went Thursday night to the beginners meeting, and it was a beginners meeting, so I sort of clung to that early on. And the other thing was, I was still getting up early to go. I get on the road at 5 a.m., so I'm up at 4, on the road by 5, and the 7 a.m. meeting on Saturday morning looked good to me. That's still another hour of sleep. I was sleeping in. So I started going to that, and that was a big book meeting. And my sponsor's in there, Rich is in there, and he just, I'm a happy alcoholic, I'm not saying it the way he does, believe me. But he just had this peace in his, in his presentation. I had no clue, tell you the truth, I was judging everybody in that room those first few times in. I had stories for all of them, I had been listening to, truthfully, I thought I was going to get sober on my own. Hey, I found it on the internet. I found the steps. I found the big book in audio. Now, at the time, I had been listening to a lot of audio books. Found the big book in audio format. I will learn from this. But then I started hearing about speakers. Got a lot of speakers on CD. So I was going back and forth to work listening to this stuff. And they said, find a sponsor, get somebody to help. And, at first I was not really wanting to do that. I was going to be able, the big book on audio is dry when you're by yourself and you're not stopping and discussing it. It just went by. I don't think I heard a word of it. But the whole get somebody that has something that you want, well, his peacefulness, I just didn't understand that. I was like, how can he be so happy in this crappy-ass world, you know? I just didn't understand it. So, and it doesn't hurt that he kept hounding me. You know, you can't do this on your own. So, finally one day I did say, will you be my sponsor? And I still laugh because I think I may have been in the program about 3 months at the time. And he says, well, come on over Tuesday night and we'll get started. And I would go to his house and he says, don't get comfortable, we're getting in the car. And the first time I met him, he takes me down to Mary Washington to share my story with an alcoholic sitting in a bed. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to be able to tell this guy? And, you know, today I realize there's plenty of people that want to know, how did you stay sober 2 days as opposed to 40 years? You know, it was a great experience, just that, and the conversation going back and forth. And he took me through the steps. Took me through this book. You know, at that point, I really didn't have a lot of problems with step one. I could see where I was an alcoholic. Going through the steps, one of the biggest helps for me was the doctor's opinion. I had done everything in my life on willpower. If I wanted to do it, it got done, but drinking could not be stopped. And reading that section and, you know, being told that I have a disease or an allergy, you know, that once I have the first one, I never know how many more I'm going to want. I get a craving for more. That was a big trigger for me to go, yeah, I see that. And that got me to say, I'm powerless over alcohol. The funny thing is, the life is unmanageable. In that first drive, he asked me, how's my life unmanageable? And at the time, I was like, well, I'm starting to miss work, and, you know, I'm not getting up, and I can't do anything, and I feel depressed. You know, at the time, it felt like it was those material things that was my unmanageability, but, man, I've learned it's what's in my head, my emotions. You know, I can't manage my emotions. Anger is a big, quick strike. Pity, man, I have a lot of self-pity. One of the sayings in the big book, selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of I love that statement because, you know, it is the root of my problem and I have so much trouble seeing it. I have to have another alcoholic point it out to me of where and the why that, you know, do you see how that's selfish? I don't know what speaker I was listening to, but they said, you know, low self-esteem is basically selfishness. You're thinking of yourself all the time. And I thought, ooh. You know, because I always felt I had low self-esteem. When it came to, you know, I made that decision in step two. That also wasn't a big deal. Step three, you know, I always felt there was a God, but God, he didn't like me. You know, he was against me. Sandy Beach always shares about him and his sister sitting in church and him seeing one thing and his sister seeing another. That described me and my family to a T. My sister's so spiritual in her church environment, and she took off with church and youth group and all that, and I went the other way. And it just was, God was against me. You know, he just did not like me. I was always blaming him for, you know, it's not like I didn't think he was there. He just was again, and, you know, just like many others describe, I said the foxhole prayers all the time, get me out of this. And or other one I like to call is I always tested him. If you get me this, then I know you exist, you know? And, you know, a lot of that this never showed up, so he didn't, you know, he didn't like me. But the whole, you know, deep down inside each and every one of us is a fundamental idea of God. That helped me a lot. It was inside me, you know, not my own understanding. You know, I didn't have to abide by the religion and all the doctrines, and, you know, all of that bugged me so much growing up. And having that freedom of, you know, just a personal relationship just set me free. And, you know, going back to that first night and that first meeting, I left that meeting got home, crawled on the bed, fetal position, crying my butt off. And I said, God, please, I hope this works. And I had some feeling come over to me. And, you know, Bill describes a bright light. Mine wasn't that, but there was something. That's all I can tell you. Something went across me that I'd never felt before. And the whole fact that I've stopped drinking, you know, I haven't had a drink in 9 years. Every time I have a doubt about God loving me or God wanting me, I can go back to, I could never stop drinking on my own. He got me. You know, he stopped me. And, you know, that's my higher power. So, you know, getting to that was one of the greatest pieces. Four and five, four revealed a lot as far as the going back to that emotional unmanageability and the whole selfishness and all that. You know, I did, like I said, I didn't have a lot of consequences. I also didn't have a lot of, you know, material type amends because I didn't owe people money. I didn't, you know, didn't really get out of the house enough to piss people off. But going through like the fear, so the resentment was there. You know, those things I told you about being mad at bosses and people selling companies, you know, and, you know, not being, there's another piece in the book that talks about relying on others for our happiness, you know, seeing that where how much I have of that I was doing and really getting down through and looking at each thing going, well, fear's the root of that fear. You know, my life is major fear. Resentment has gotten so much better. You know, resentment is now just a little bit of anger instead of resentment, you know, and anger's natural. Resentment isn't. But the fear still pops up, you know, and you know, sitting down and sharing that with my sponsor, another human being. I described it as a kid. I used to go to confession as a Catholic, and it was very similar to that to me. But I do have to say, at first it felt a little weird because he wasn't wearing a collar, but, you know, in general, it was about the same. And that was a, you know, it's just all this weight gets lifted off you to, you know, admit all those things to somebody else. And I think I just read it recently where, you know, if you don't do it with another person, it's, you're not quite getting yourself free. And it was great to do that. I was very literal when I went through the first time, and I got home and I actually set my book on my fireplace mantle because it was the only shelf I had because I wanted to set it up on the shelf. You know, it said, do exactly what it says in this book. So, and I sat quietly for an hour, and, you know, it's funny over time, you know, when the first years you're really confused. Did I do it right? Did I do this right? And do I know all the, you know, because I'm like, oh, he's going to take all of his defects away, you know. And it's like, no, they don't all go away. You're not pristine the minute you say that prayer. And to tell you the truth, thinking about that, I think I've got a lot. They come and go, you know. I wish they would all go, but I see over time they get better. The time span's shorter. You know, it's, I always used to tell the story of, you know, when I first came, before I came in, somebody would cut me off in Gainesville, and I would chase them to Centerville just so that I could give them the bird. You know, I still get angry at people that cut me off. And I do love Dave. He's like, if you let them in, they can't cut you off. I learned that one from him, you know. But it has gotten so much better. You know, I have to deal with traffic. It's just part of my commute and my job. And some days I'm on better spiritual plane than others. But for the most part, I never get that bad anymore. I just, all right, it happened, and I can let it go. That's what's so nice about it is you can let it go. Amends, like I said, I didn't have a lot of material type amends. Tell you, sometimes I get in a mode of I'm not alcoholic enough. I don't have those kind of men. Yeah, I can try to not relate in by doing that stuff. But more and more, it's like, no, you know, I can't control the amount I take when I start, you know, and I always go back to those lines. But amends-wise, I've been a lot more living amends, being more available for people. I used to lay in bed drunk and worry that I was getting a phone call from a parent needing a ride to the hospital, or, you know, something has happened, and being too far gone to ever be able to do that. And that's a fear while I was drinking. I always wanted to be there, be available, and today I am available. You know, I think the biggest thing that's improved is my relationships. Not just, I used to say with my family, it's only, but relationships with friends, relationships with AA members, relationships at work. One that I always like to bring up about honesty, they talk about this being an honest program. Heck, I was only maybe 2 years sober, and you know, the honesty happened. I had done something at work where it cost the government $70,000 in one day, overnight, because of a mistake I had made. It was a typo in a piece of script, and I sat there and thought, I mean, because I went back in and fixed that little typo and everything got running again, and I sat there and thought about stuffing that down, you know. But the principles of this program told me, you know, you need to be honest. And I went into that boss's office and I said, this issue was me. I made a mistake. It was a mistake. I didn't do it on purpose. But if you're looking for somebody to blame, it's me. And, you know, I got more or less, you know, thanked for doing so rather than scolded. So I know there's times where honesty will get you, you know, you shouldn't and shouldn't, but it just shows to me honesty is so much easier. It's a lot, you know, I've always thought as I start telling little white lies, they grow into bigger ones and bigger ones, and then I forget what the heck I was lying about in the first place. So, but back to amends, most of my amends are living and being there and doing things for people, showing up where I've always been told, you know, you be where you say you're going to be and do what you say you're going to do. And believe me, last Friday I didn't want to go. It was raining. I didn't want to go to Boxwood. I really didn't want to go. But I said I'd do it, and I went. And, you know, I wish I could remember that when I go, I feel better when I come out. But it takes going in to feel better when I come out. And I felt a lot better after I got out. So, you know, be where I'm supposed to be. I'd like to say I'm a, you know, everyday 10-11 guy, but I would say that I am every day. I take a break once in a while because I'm tired. I want to go to bed, so I don't do it that night. But daily, I am trying to make conscious contact with my God. You know, my prayers can be said driving to work. My prayers can be said when I'm walking. My prayers can be said when I start feeling a little jittery. You know, I got an uncomfortable situation. I just stop and say a prayer. I do like reviewing my day. And truthfully, where I tend to review my day is every morning I do a gratitude list. And it's really that morning I'm sort of reviewing the day before, but it's much better. I'm remembering a lot of the positive things that have happened. Just little things. We were talking about the mountain range as you're driving down here tonight. So many things I was blind to when I was drinking. Joe and Charlie, I love where he brings up, I saw green grass. You know, something as simple as that. And getting up early and driving to work, I see beautiful sunrises every day. This time of year, I'm seeing some sunsets depending on time, otherwise I'm being blinded. But most of the time I just love nature today, sitting on my front porch and just becoming part of, and, you know, deer, squirrel, birds. You know, it's amazing. You just sit quietly. A bird almost sit on your, you know, sit on your chair with you. But, you know, I just love that. Step 12, I've always struggled with because I haven't done a lot of sponsorship. And I'm always like, oh, you got a sponsor. But over time, I've learned, well, you know, some people, everybody's got, and I would think it was just yesterday that the daily reflection or 24-hour was about service. And, you know, my strength is not sponsoring people. My strength is the business side of this or the setting up the chairs or, you know, I have no trouble getting up early so I can open, or I hate being late for things, so I'm good at opening meetings because I end up being there way before everybody else anyway. You know, making coffee, you know, getting wearing wins, you know. Everybody has a service, you know. 12-step work, I finally came to the conclusion 12-step work isn't just sponsoring, you know. It's keeping AA moving, and I think that's what God has in store for me, at least at this point in time. I, you know, life has changed. I really cannot believe it's been 9 years. I really cannot believe it's been that long. Admittedly, some of it's getting older, and time's just getting going by fast in general. But if you told, I know when I think I was about 4 years sober when I first spoke here, and I thought, if you told me 4 years, well, if you told me nine, I wouldn't have believed it. The statement about shortchanging yourself if you make a list, you know, I'm seeing that come to fruition. I've got things that I just, when I was a freshman in high school, I took a technical drawing class. And in that class, they had us draw our, you know, dream house and whatever. And in that class, I drew a nice colonial style house. And then off in the distance, I built a shop. And, you know, I was a freshman in high school, and that was my dream. Well, guess what? I had those things, you know. I got to build my shop in sobriety. I love working on things. I love doing yard work and everything. I'm kind of odd that way maybe, but, you know, that's what keeps me busy. I won't say in shape, but it keeps me busy. But life has really been good to me. Another thing that in the, you know, dredges of drinking, you know, I had that girlfriend. She lived in Springfield. It was long distance. And so we really all didn't see each other every night. We saw each other like 2 weekends every other week. You know, it wasn't a real relationship the way I look at it. It was convenient for me, though. I could drink like I wanted to. But it was very lonely. You know, I sat and drank on that couch. I had been in Culpeper 10 years at that point before I got sober. I didn't know anybody in Culpeper. And, you know, in these days, you don't talk to your neighbors that much. And still, I don't really know my neighbors that well. But today, gosh, my phone is full. You know, it's so uplifting to me, being the way I was, to actually be in the grocery store and see another alcoholic and have a conversation in the grocery store with somebody. I mean, that's something simple that lifts my day, is just having that sight. You know, and a lot of times you see them when you're in a mood, you know, and you just need, or they catch you, you know, that's even worse. It's not quite as fun. You know, I haven't been able, I love coming up here and speak because I feel that a lot of my stuff I hold down comes up out. You know, I wouldn't say hold down, but I don't give it as much weight as I should. It's really good to get it out and realize how great life is. Are there things I wish I had still? Yeah, but more and more I'm getting better at accepting, hey, this is today. Let's live today, you know, one day at a time. And it's not so bad now because it's not like one day at a time I don't want to drink. It's one day at a time of, okay, I've got to deal with this defect, or one day at a time of I'm going to wait a little bit longer on whatever the answer to that prayer is. You know, and hopefully just live life, you know, based on the principles, based on how I feel my higher power wants me to live life. I one other thing that I used to be one of these guys that had to have the answer to everything, especially at work. I always had this fear I'll get fired if I don't know the answer, or I always got to tell somebody else, you know, no, it's not that way. This is the way it is. And, you know, I say that these defects aren't removed, but I see improvement, because today I see where I want to jump into these conversations. You know, in general, I want to give them the answer, tell them this is, and I find my biting my tongue, you know, well, wait a minute. No, you don't have a place there. This is not you. You know, just stand back. It'll work out. And, you know, and I'll tell you another compliment I had, and a guy that never knew me drunk, obviously, but in my new job. And I was there one day, and I think I made some comment about being angry about traffic. And he's like, really? I can never imagine you being angry. And I was like, wow. You know, it's just a blessing. Those little things just make me feel so much better about. You know, I'm going to end a little bit early, and I'm happy Ken. Is Ken still standing there? Oh, there he is. He didn't walk out. Thanks, oh, yeah. Ken. but I'm going to end it here. You know, I just suggest everybody work this program. If you're here new, give it a try. Get a sponsor. I mean, do service mm-hmm. work, because service work kept me committed. You know, I can tell you last year I was a little bit out of it because I dropped a lot of my commitments and then started getting less meetings. I'm feeling on a pretty good note here this year. And, you know, weird, I was thinking I hadn't spoken in a while and needed to get this out. So, you know, God must have been talking to me and Billy. So thank you, Billy, for having me.
I'm Richard. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Chris for coming up here and giving us a good story tonight.